KALW. From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in El Cervante.
I live in Emeryville.
I live in Antioch, California.
Potter's Creek.
Coming up, we seek a deeper connection to nature through the work of a local artist.
I love the natural world and its incredible infinite complexity. You know, it's so much more beautiful and complex than anything people make, you know. And yet, here I am trying to make pictures of it. So it's like a, you know, contradiction there. You know, when I see something beautiful, I want to draw.
Then we'll meet a choreographer who says she found her artistic voice as she was battling cancer.
Couldn't walk. I wasn't sure if I'd be able to dance. So I had to translate what was coming through me, these visions coming through me, onto other bodies.
A window into the creative process. That's coming up today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Marin County is a natural playground. Framed by the Pacific Ocean, the Golden Gate, and San Francisco Bay, it includes the rolling hills of the Marin Headlands, the lush Muir Woods, the Point Reyes Peninsula, and above it all, Mount Tamalpais. A local man raised on the slopes of the mountain has etched this scenery time and time again in his artwork. He's a woodcut printmaker, a medium that's a rare combination of skill, patience, craft, mechanics, and artistry. A rare combination like the landscapes that are both his subject and inspiration. He's been honored this year with the Marin Cultural Treasure Award for his contributions to the Marin County community. And he has a new exhibit up at the Marin Center in San Rafael. KALW's Ben Trefney brings us the story of Marin County through photography, poetry, music, and the artistry of Tom Killian.
There are a few spirits in this part of the world, not wholly divorced from nature, with something of the poetry of the savage left. They have made a gallant fight to keep the mountain undefiled and to rouse all the people to an appreciation of its wonders. They are inspirers of the project that asked the world to see an ancient miracle play on one of the most picturesque spots in the world. John Barry.
Tom Killian is working in his studio on a forested ridge up the Point Reyes Peninsula. He looks at spectacular vistas of waterways, of trees, of hills and high peaks. They're all in the wood he's carving.
It's really good to have broken lines and twisting things and sort of more organic forms in the markings. And I'm kind of conscious of that as I do things. I make sure nothing is ever too straight or too even, and that there's always a little bit of randomness in any patterning I do. And that gives the overall effect one that feels more like the natural world.
Killian is nearly 60 years old, but looks much younger than that. He's lean, regularly hikes, bikes, and swims around Tamales Bay. His experiences feed the work he does here, in this sun-filled space. As a Swainson's thrush sings outside, Killian carves the outline of a hillside in a block of Japanese linden wood.
This is how it goes through it. So I spent a lot of time carving the plywood blocks. That's probably the biggest amount of time that I spend on these prints is the carving. You know, it can take days to carve. It can take a week or two even.
Caminante, no hay camino. Se hace camino al andar. Walker, there is no path. You make the path as you walk. Antonio Machado.
Killian was a child when he found his inspiration, the work of 19th century popular Japanese artist Hokusai. Hokusai made clean lined images of nature, reproduced on paper through woodcut prints. He had a beautiful line, Killian says, one of the most beautiful lines of any artist in history.
Probably when I was 12 or 11, my mother found some little book of Hokusai's 36 Views of Mount Fuji and gave it to me just because she knew I liked Asian art. And Kids are intrigued by things like that, but I was really taken by the way the trees look, the twisted pines and the cliffs and the mist and the rivers and the little foot trails. And I love that world. And I also, at the same time, was starting being taken on little hikes in Mount Tam and the Sierras and seeing things that looked like that, particularly Mount Tamalpais, because I grew up right under Mount Tam in Mill Valley. And I thought, you know, I live in a world like that. I like this world. I want to draw pictures of this world.
Those picnics covered with sand, no money made them more gay. We crossed over hills in the night and walked along beaches by day. Sage in the rain or the sand, spattered by new falling rain. That ocean was too cold to swim, but we did it again and again. Gary Snyder.
I tried drawing, pen and ink drawings of, you know, things I liked around where I grew up in Mill Valley, like Mount Tamalpais and the coast over by Stinson Beach and the San Francisco skyline and Golden Gate Bridge. But I really preferred the idea of doing it like the Japanese who I looked up to so much did.
In college, Killian continued to hone his craft, producing a book called 28 Views of Tamalpais, dark blue images printed from carved linoleum blocks. He learned how to reproduce the art using a letterpress.
Because you got to remember, people have been doing this since the 1500s, you know, and putting illustrations together with type. It was the original multimedia, you know, where you could get thoughts and ideas mixed in with visuals. That's how I learned how to use this machine, and it became my tool for something totally different, making these multicolor Japanese-inspired woodcut prints.
In the 1800s, Hokusai and other Japanese artists would paint pictures, then supervise teams of people who would reproduce the work by hand. Some specialized in woodcutting, others printing the reliefs on paper. Killian, by contrast, does it all himself.
And I have to keep playing with the inking constantly. So every one ends up being just slightly different, too. And that adds to the charm of the whole thing because, you know, every print in the end turns out a little bit differently.
He leads me to a large table near the back of his studio. He pulls out a book of progressive proofs, a collection of papers that show his steps from a conceptual sketch to a carved key block to the final woodcut print.
And so this Bolinas Ridge, it's from high up on a mountainside over kind of a grassy meadow with orange California poppies in the foreground. And then it's looking out over sort of a watershed that's going out over the ocean.
Yeah,
and the ocean.
Bolinas Lagoon down there in the, that's Bolinas, that dark Duxbury Point.
In the top right of the
And then the ocean with the sunset kind of golden on it.
Uh-huh, so this is a sunset picture.
So that's how it started, as this sketch. Mm-hmm. And you can see that it's pretty sketchy. Mm-hmm. And the sketch probably took an hour to do. Sitting up there in February, my hands were freezing. And it was just a perfect sunset, so.
How far is that from right here, where we're in your studio?
Oh, 10 miles or 15 miles. It's down the Alima Valley and up on the ridge above Bolinas, on the side of Mount Tamalpais. And then here's the tracing paper that I put over it for the transfer to the key block. And then here is...
So the tracing paper is much, what you traced there is much more spare than your original sketch as far as the...
Yeah, it's got the lines that I'm going to need to make the print. And then I added in the poppies, you see. They weren't in that sketch because they don't come out until March.
Oh, okay.
But I wanted to have poppies. So.
Oh, you have license to be there.
Well, that's what I do, yeah. So this is the key block in its informational stage. You see there's lines here that show where the sunset is going to be more golden on the sea and the swell lines. Mm-hmm. And then in the meantime, I've drawn some ideas about how many blocks I'm going to need. So I've got a land tint block, the sea gold and poppies block, green grass block, a shadow block, and then the sea tint block.
So when you then decide upon that color scheme Do you carve those blocks for just those parts that are going to take those colors?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
those are blocks that are partial pictures.
Yeah. They're just, each block of the color blocks is just for one layer of color.
Lo, I looked and saw the silvery ripples of the brook, the fruit upon the hills, the waving trees, and mellow fields of harvest. Saw the gate burn in the sunset. The thin thread of mist creep white across the Sausalito hills, till the day darkened down the ocean rim. The sunset purple slipped from Tamalpais, and bay and sky were bright with sudden stars. Ina Coolbrith.
Killian moves across the studio to his printing press, a 1,500-pound Asburn proof press. He bought it in San Francisco for about $350, back when computers ushered out the age of typesetting.
So right now I'm locking this block into the bed of the press. And I'm putting in the furniture. There's metal furniture and wooden furniture, and they're like these little blocks that that hold the block that I'm going to print from right in place.
And then he prints, one block, one color at a time. Every block must be set precisely so the colors meet the lines.
If there isn't some little flaws in it, it wouldn't really be right anyway. And you know, the Japanese, they would intentionally put them in.
Well, if they get too good.
yeah, that everything should have some flaw in it. Nothing can be perfect, you know. So why not just put it in there? Then you're done with that. You're already through it.
Are you that good yet?
No. I don't have to intentionally put in flaws. There's plenty of them unintentionally.
Old Tamalpais, he looks so grave, with his brow in the cloud and his chin in the wave. Charles Warren Stoddard.
Tom Killian has a degree from UC Santa Cruz and a PhD from Stanford in African history. He's traveled the world, producing art wherever he's gone, but he's always come home.
I've decided to kind of concentrate on California. There's lots of beautiful places in the world, but I really know it well in the Sierras and along the coast, and that's what I like. My favorite areas are anywhere around here.
Tom Killian's works are rich, but their names are simple, poetic. Garden of Allah, Mountain Theater, Divide Meadow, Shell Beach, Bolinas Ridge to Point Montara.
I love the natural world and its incredible, infinite complexity. You know, it's so much more beautiful and complex than anything people make, you know. And yet, here I am trying to make pictures of it, so it's like a, you know, contradiction there. You know, when I see something beautiful, I want to draw. I don't know where that comes from, but I've always had that. And particularly, I love, you know, trees and landforms and then the movement of the sea and things like that. And then there's a challenge to it because it's really hard with carving everything in reverse on wood blocks and the hard edge of the woodcut print to get the soft flowing shapes and movement of water and sky and clouds. And yet when you can do it, you at least say to yourself, wow, I did that. I managed to make it look like that with this medium, you know, and it's kind of fun.
Through the sharp gap of gorge below, from mountain's feet the gaze may go over a stretch of fields, broad sunned, then glance beyond across the beautiful bay, to that dim ridge a score of miles away, lifting its clear-cut outline high, azure with distance on the azure sky. Edward Roland Sill.
In Tom Killian's studio on Inverness Ridge, I'm Ben Trefney for Cross Currents.
That story was accompanied by the music of shakuhachi player Masayuki Koga. A special exhibit of Tom Killian's work is on display at the Marin Center's Bartolini Gallery until April 28th. All that information is at kalw.org. Click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Dancer and choreographer Rulan Tangen believes that, quote, to dance is to live, and to live is to dance. You can see this idea manifested in her dance company, Dancing Earth Creations, which she founded in 2004 after surviving cancer. She calls the work Indigenous Contemporary Dance, inspired by the intertribal and interdisciplinary nature of the company. Her pieces explore themes like nature, transformation, and decolonization, all through an Indigenous matriarchal worldview. Dancing Earth led a series of workshops and is performing as part of Dance Mission's Dirt Festival in San Francisco this weekend. KALW's Jen Chien spoke with Rulan Tangen about the new piece and the origins of her art.
Some artists have a kind of origin story where when they fell in love with their art form or when they knew that that was the life path for them. Do you have a moment like that?
You know, I have an origin story because, where do our origins begin? So I want to begin with Dancing Earth. And the origin for that actually happened when I was in the throes of cancer treatment and definitely at the edge of life and death. And I'm blessed to say that it was probably 13 years ago that I was having cancer treatments. I had already had a full career in New York and Europe and Canada and California as well, where I started dance, actually. And I was sort of swept off my feet because I'd always believed, you know, the one thing that I had was the strength of my body. Like I might not have, you know, a lot of, the strength of my body and my mind and my will. So when I was diagnosed with cancer, I was almost felt like, you know, everything that I knew to be true about myself was no longer true. But I knew that I had a purpose to bring something to this planet that hadn't existed before or not existed the way it exists now as Dancing Earth. Before that, I was always dancing to make a living, to make ends meet, and I still needed to pay my medical bills, and so engagements were being offered to me, but if I couldn't walk, I wasn't sure if I'd be able to dance, so I had to translate what was coming through me, these visions coming through me, onto other bodies, which I think is choreography, and I had to go deep inside myself to understand what is life, really? I remember looking down and seeing my chest rise and fall and thinking, well, if there's movement there, I must be alive. I must be breathing. And in fact, that quality of movement, that torso being this living entity is very present in my work now. So when I was creating dance coming out of cancer, I no longer could dance like, okay, move like this, or I want it to look like this, based on like technical strength and my skill or what I could imagine, and then turning that into movement. I had to really look at the functionality and the efficiency of movement and why we do things. What is the purpose of movement? And I really believe it indigenized my process, which is something I talk about all the time, is continually decolonizing and indigenizing our process, which is, dance as a functional ritual, usually for transformation. That was the beginning. So it came from a time of a life and death moment, and then blossoming forward with new life. And I can imagine this would be relevant now, where many people of my mom's generation, for example, who ushered in civil rights and feminism, have seen, in a sense, a death to all that with the current political regime and, you know, the country falling back into places where we never thought we'd go before. And, in some cases, feeling a death of hope. And then out of that, I'm hoping for this pulsing heart of this revolution, because in a way, the system was cracked to begin with, because anything that's on the back of slavery and, you know, land grabs and massacres.
Are you talking about the system of the United States?
That's right. So it might be time for a complete overhaul, and that's, in a sense, the piece that I'm creating is called Treaty Making, We Stand Together. And the whole workshop we did this morning, which was called The Movement of Movement Building, was a whole series of decolonizing exercises to get us to this consciousness of taking our first gentle steps on this ground, being aware of the imprint we make on the territory of Yelamu, which is we're basically walking on the bones of ancestors. So knowing that, you know, in our desire for what, you know, we want what we want, we are stepping on the backs of others. And, you know, once we're aware of that, to be conscious of what do we have to give? What is it that we are doing that gives us a right to be here rather than to be as parasites? And I think it's something we can look at as a society of, you know, how are we contributing? What are we giving back?
You spoke about dance as a functional ritual. How is that different than how you had understood dance before that?
For me, even when I was a young ballet dancer, I always approached dance as a ritual, like the pulling back the hair and the warming up, like this sort of sense of preparing oneself for this, you know, these moments on stage. But I think when I say functional, I'm looking at very practical things like dancing for water, dancing for seeds to come out of the ground, dancing for the seasons to change. So these are, in a sense, many tribal peoples have had those ritual dances from the beginning of time. I'm revisiting the idea from the notion of intertribalism. So people that are coming together from different cultural backgrounds, maybe speaking different languages. Like there were languages of Cherokee, Apache, Navajo. And instead of me superimposing an idea that or a phrase that everyone copies, instead we were investigating an idea or a theme and letting everyone bring their cultural as well as their creative contribution. And so the creative process was very much collaborative and, for me, empowering for each of the people in the room. So their individualities became very important.
These are your collaborators.
Yes.
That are coming from all different backgrounds.
Exactly. So the diversity really informed the work.
Also, it strikes me that a lot of indigenous dance traditions on different continents have to do with participation, and they're not about performance. They're mm-hmm. not about a separation between audience and the doer of the dance,
mm-hmm.
but they're more of a community activity.
Mm-hmm.
So is that sort of built into what your company does as well?
Certainly, some of the performances. In a sense, even my company, when we first started, many people didn't consider them. They didn't know what a professional dancer was. So they themselves were community members that were suddenly a part of something. And then they'd get other community members involved and like, oh, my cousin, he's a DJ. Maybe you can help out with this. So I do love the idea of audience participation. And some of our performances bring that in, whether the audience is participating by writing something down or by helping paint on something or literally by joining in the rhythms. So we'll see if that evolves out of this piece. We have First Nations people of California that are all present on stage the entire time, sort of sitting there solid. We have been here. We have always been here. We will still be here. And then at the end, after all, like we're sharing these beautiful spoken word treaties and spoken words recorded at Standing Rock, and suddenly all of those words are going to be empowered by the purity of their voices, making pure vocalizations that it sort of bypasses time, it bypasses language, it's a pure energy activation. Sound is actually movement, it's a vibration. So I'm interested in the vibration of these California Native voices that have been here since the beginning of time and see what happens to all of our bodies in that room.
That was Rulan Tangen of Dancing Earth Creations. She spoke with KALW's Jen Chien. Dancing Earth is performing as part of Dance Mission's Dirt Festival in San Francisco this Saturday and Sunday. For more information, go to our website, kalw.org, click Cross Currents. And that does it for Cross Currents today. Our team includes Leela Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Olivia Henry, Angela Johnston, Jeremy Jew, Chris Hoff, Ted Muldoon, Lisa Morehouse, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, Carrie Spivak, and Andrew Stelzer. Today's show was engineered by James Rollins. The line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Cheehan. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Treffney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by Oakland band Whisker Man. They play at the Catalyst Atrium in Santa Cruz on Friday. Find the information at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. For KALW News, I'm Hannah Baba. 'Cause it's been rumbling.